Diva Corda Gael, it's 40 Gradi Sportsline on Scariff Bay Community Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. You're welcome once again to the Sportsline Show here on Scariff Bay Community Radio in association with Derek Credit Union on 88.3 FM, 92.7 FM, and on the TuneIn app. And on today's show, we're going to be talking Camogie with the chairman and chairperson of the Clare Camogie Board, Joe O'Donnell. We're also going to be joined by well-known journalist of over 50 years' experience, Seamus Hayes, as we look back on last weekend's active great victories for Tipperary and Cavan in their respective championships and looking forward to their progress later on. And finally, at the conclusion of the programme, we're going to be joined, as always, by well-known former Kilkenny player and man very good to see on Scariff Bay Community Radio, it's Adrian Ronan. And of course, I'm always joined, especially here in the studio, by my co-presenter, Pat McNamara. And now we're joined on the line by the chairperson of the Clare Camogie Board. It's a man well known to the people of Clare and all over. A man well known for refereeing and a top class official in going into his third year as chairperson of the Clare Camogie Board. It's Joe O'Donnell. And Joe, you're welcome once again to Scariff Bay Community Radio.
Thank you, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Joe, I suppose looking back on the year gone by and look at what a difficult year with COVID, etc. And in fairness to the Clare Camogie Board, they've done a tremendous job in promoting the game and getting nearly all their games and everything over. Looking back on it, Joe, how did you find the year in such difficult circumstances?
It was difficult at different stages and there were varying degrees of difficulty. But the one overriding memory of the whole year is how accommodating everybody was towards everybody else. I mean, in terms of clubs and in terms of fixtures and all that sort of stuff, and in terms of the cooperation of GAA clubs and getting facilities when they were getting busy themselves. You know, so, there was an awful lot of goodwill around, and I think it probably opened up a lot of people's minds living more than we had been up to now. But all in all, the year was a tough one for everybody involved, and it was tougher for players than young people, not being able to get out and about, get out on the pitch, getting their exercise, you know, following their normal or their favourite hobby. So, to that extent, I must admit that the clubs and the county management teams did a very good job in keeping communication lines open and in giving players programmes to keep them going during what was essentially a six-month closed season. You know, so that was a big boost.
Joe, looking at from official limits, as you said, it was all about cooperation and there was great cooperation from the clubs.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about that. But the amount of procedures that the board as a whole had to put in place was time-taking but essential.
They were essential. And I mean, the longer this went on and the more serious we saw the way it was developing, to be very foolish to avoid any of the procedures that were put in place to safeguard every one of us. And again, to go back to cooperation, I must say, and you would have seen it yourselves at the matches that you've been broadcasting, the level of cooperation from the spectators who weren't allowed to go to matches, we'll call it, the level of cooperation from people like that, and not trying to get in the gate, you know, those people are great, we try and get in the gate anyway, if there's any way at all. But I must say, this year, I showed a different side of people. Everybody was prepared to follow the regulations or the guidelines or protocols, whatever you call them, almost without exception. And Joe, that was very heartening to see.
Joe, Pat here as well, and nice to talk to you.
Are you?
Just Joe, on that subject of protocols, etc., how important and vital was it for you as a board and yourselves as individuals on the board to have your own headquarters there in Doura or on the Doura Road, that fabulous facility, you know, that we didn't have a few years ago, for club games and indeed county games, you know, where you knew the geography of the place, you were in charge of it yourselves and all of that, and it's a great facility. How important was that considering the year that did come with COVID?
You couldn't overstate the importance of it. I mean, we discussed it every day we were up there when we got back to playing games. We'd mention how lucky we were to have our own particular pitch and facilities. And as you say, you were able to organise. You could put everything in place. It needed to be put in place. You weren't dependent on somebody else doing it. And on top of that, on the day, it was easy to be in complete control. And the funny thing about it was, our executive and a lot of other people, particularly management members from the county panels, turned up on those match days and acted as stewards and made sure everything was in order. there was car parking here, but there was access there, but it was safe distance in there. You know, whatever the arrangements had to be looked after, were looked after by everybody very generously. And that was very important. But if we didn't have our own particular grounds, then it mightn't have been that easy. And the second thing, of course, was that because of the condition of the pitch up there now this year, we were able to play an awful lot of matches. We were able to play double headers if we needed to.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made good use of the facility this year, more so than ever before, you know. So it goes without saying that having your own ground gives you an awful lot of freedom in terms of what you can do with fixtures and with arrangements.
And Joe, there's no doubt about that. You know, if this was another year and you didn't have your own pitch, you were going begging to clubs or whatever and trying to get in here and there. And it was great from the point of organisation that, you know, you had Camogie games on Friday night, Saturday night and Sunday of the weekend, you know, essentially. And, you know, bare down to a couple of games that were just caught short to the end at underage, it was a very successful year in the playing of the games.
Well, it was. I mean, and I'm looking at it now, and we're talking now in the context of administration and organisation. But go back to the players, who were the most important people in all of this. I mean, the players had certainty. They knew that their match was on Friday or Friday week or Friday fortnight or a Saturday or Sunday. And they even knew the time. Everything was organised in advance because we had our own facilities. And from the players' point of view, they had great certainty. They weren't waiting until maybe 2 days before to find out whether they had a pitch here or had a pitch there. You know, so...
And as well, Joe, even from a board kind and from an official kind board point of view as well, it must be great that, you know, certainty for yourselves, not in the fact that come the weekend, the next thing some place is unplayable or some pitch is double booked or whatever, the certainty for yourself, you know, it took an awful lot of pressure off, there's no doubt about that.
It did take an awful lot of pressure off, but I mean, that's not to forget the great cooperation we get from a lot of the GA pitches anyway, when we need them. I mean, we had been in the Classic 3 years with our county finals, and fair play to them, they always looked after us. You know, we've been down on the bridge, we've been in Cracklow, you know, we've been all over the place.
Clooney as well, yeah, if you like that.
Clooney were outstanding this year. They gave us at the pitches every weekend we wanted them. They were fantastic. But we've been using Tuller, we've been using Crosheen, you know, all the pitches around the place that have lights are popped from the point of view of training, especially at the latter end of the year when the county teams were still playing.
And Joe, I suppose just on to leave the COVID for a second, looking back on the club scene, there were some absolutely tremendous games at all levels, but particularly in the senior championship and the intermediate. You know, the standard of play was exceptional. There was some surprise results. There was close games. There was extra times. You know, overall, I think from as a chairperson of the board, you must have been thrilled with the fare served up by all the players and all the clubs, given the difficulties we had.
Oh God, I was. And I mean, as you said, the standard has improved immensely. Now, on top of that, even our under-14 competitions, when we got to the semi-finals, there the four teams in the semi-finals, the standard that they served up on the day was fantastic. And a lot of that is down to the development of large groups of people on, you know, developing camps, coming through at 13 or 14 or 15, that kind of area. And if girls are that good at under-14, you have a great chance of falling onto them. And if they develop the skills early, then it will be a lot easier for them to develop further in terms of their playing strength as they get into the adult area.
And speaking of playing strength from under 14 up, Joe, I suppose that the popular thing now in the counties that are sort of, you know, pulling away is to have a kind of a common way of training, a common sense of strength and conditioning and control throughout the whole system. Is that something you're looking at as a board?
It is, very much so. And in fact, funny as you say, we call it the managing teams of the development squads in the 14th and 16th, right up to the senior, all met this year to try and hammer out a common understanding of where we'll be going into, and we'll be trying to drive that even further in the coming year.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the things we've often said, maybe as observers, was that teams like Clare trying to break through and a few others to match your Corks and your Kilkennys and your Galways, I suppose, as it is now, maybe Tipperary as well, you know, to develop physically. And strength and conditioning has become a big, big issue. I know girls do their own individual work, and I know some clubs will be ahead of others. But as again, as a county, I suppose, is it something you look at in having maybe a sort of a centralized system of getting girls stronger and fitter from maybe 16, 17, 18 up to junior and senior?
Well, in fact, only this evening I was reading a proposal to actually start such a program from under 14, from 14 up. A graduated program that's just developed on a scientific basis and is followed by all the players. And that's some, no, it won't happen overnight, I can guarantee you that, but it's something that we have to work towards. And over a period of time, we will have to get to a situation where the teams... I mean, look, at we saw it in the All-Ireland quarter-final against Cork. Our team matched them toe-to-toe for the first half an hour, and maybe for 10 minutes in the second half, and then Cork pulled away. But the strength of the Cork team, you know, and you can see it in Galway as well.
Right.
The physical strength of those people, you know, they've been obviously been on development programs. And now, I have to say, our players do an awful lot of work. Do it on their own, and they're doing it collectively. And right through the lockdown, they were developing programs. So it's not as if they're doing nothing.
But oh, yeah.
It can be brought further.
And I suppose the junior team are very, very unlucky altogether in the sense that, you know, COVID really hammered them hard. I think they were going to go for real success this year, and horribly cut short. So for Timmy and for Anne-Marie, that was, and the girls, awfully disappointing.
It was. And I mean, that team actually has a particular level of physicality and strength, and they have fitness as well. And they were playing very, very well. Now, my heart was broken when the whole thing was pulled. And it was pulled probably 6 hours before they were due to play a match.
And they
were absolutely flying. So they lost out on the league, and then the championship was pulled from them, which was wrong.
And absolutely great credit to Anne-Marie and Timmy for all the organisation and the training they're doing with that squad. And I suppose, you know, in terms of the senior squad then, you know, I suppose a lot of those junior players probably would be capable of making the step up.
Is that how you see the future of the
two squads?
I can't forget the effort put in by Tim and Anne Marie was absolutely fantastic. You know?
No question.
They also had Anne McMahon from Bartlett.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're speaking to her. Yeah.
I mean, those people gave their time. Unreal what they did, and not only that, but they had developed a very strong team bond with the players, and everything was going well. But sorry, you were asking me about it going on to the senior.
Yeah, I suppose you know, it's a question of what is the best way going forward to ensure that some of those junior players who are of the highest quality can kind of progress onto the senior squad. Is it coming from the junior, or is it in some way that they all combine their forces together in the future?
It depends on the standards. There's no straightforward answer to that one. You have it in, say, Kilkenny, Galway, Cork, where they've had that together, but they're actually together, their first and second teams, but they're actually senior and intermediate, real senior and junior. And yeah. I don't want to end up in a situation where the people, with all due respect, but the people on the junior panel feel totally out of sorts if they're with the senior panel, or people on the senior panel may feel that they're being held back by people from the junior panel. Again, it's not an easy question to answer.
No.
But it's a big consideration that we can't walk away from. And given the year that we had gone past, it's very difficult to make very clear decisions at the minute. But we're actually in the middle of a review process with all the teams, and that will be concluded probably over the next week.
Yeah, and I suppose, Joe, as you said, you hit the nail on the head. It isn't an easy decision to come to. And, you know, going back again to the junior, it was an off-piece that junior team, weren't that finish out? And I found it very strange that it was pulled, why started and then pulled it in such a short space of time.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and I think that junior team would probably be graded up at intermediate or whatever. I'm not sure what the grade. They would definitely have been up a grade next year. They would have been at a higher standard again.
If the year had finished out and if they had won the junior All-Ireland, as I had expected they would, the Premier Junior All-Ireland, as they call it, if they had won that, then they would be intermediate next year. And that would show them exactly where they stand as a group, and it would also give us the capability of maybe blending them all together. In some respects, you could use a situation where the minors progress on after their 18, they can progress on to sort of a next level, which is say the junior or intermediate, and maybe some go to senior, but you'd have kind of a stepping stone arrangement. But a difficult thing to do, but not impossible.
Yeah, I suppose it's one that has to be teased out again. And
it is, yeah.
Galway, as Pat said, Galway and Cork and Tipperary and Kilkenny, they're at it with years. So no, it's common ground to them. So look, yeah. I suppose there has to be a breakthrough at some stage, and you know that's a decision that will be made at another day. But Joe, looking at the progress of the teams, the junior team who we thought would have gone on to win the All-Ireland. The senior team didn't have a bad year, beat Kilkenny in the league, got to within a whisker of a league final, got to an All-Ireland quarter-final. So our minor team won the Munster Championship.
Won the Munster Championship, yeah.
So look, it is progress all round, Joe.
There's no doubt about it, Leo. There's been great progress from the playing perspective at county level and at club level. As we were saying earlier, the standard like has improved immensely. Now, that didn't happen overnight, obviously. You know, it's the product of a lot of the graduates of an awful lot of them coming up along. But certainly, I would have thought that given the bad year that we had in terms of the COVID pandemic, I would have thought it was a pretty successful year from the point of view of playing Camogie.
Yeah, and there's no other way. We echo that. And then that mirrored the fact that you had your own field, which in fairness cannot be understated, and with the second field nearly at full development. Even though half the year was cut out, Joe, it was a very busy year for Clare Camogie overall.
Well, we got an awful lot of work done that I would have thought we would have lost. We got a huge job done on the park in Father McNamara Park, and it's one of the better playing surfaces that you'll find nowadays. That gave us, as I say, great freedom in terms of our fixtures. We've done a huge amount of work around the infrastructure up in Father McNamara Park as well. And a lot of improvements have been made. Money has been spent, but to good effect. And we're not going to stop. We have we've now started cleared out the second pitch area. At least we know what we're dealing with. And I would hope that in the coming year we will make more progress. Certainly.
Yes,
we have a very strong field committee there who do massive work, and certainly we can see the benefit of that too.
I was just going to ask you, Joe, as you know, as 2020, a difficult year comes to a close, and hopefully 2021 will bring new shoots. What are the targets or the plans in motion for Clare Camogie going forward into 2021?
Well, in terms of our infrastructure, are you talking about?
Both.
Well, first of all, we talk about Camogie. In terms of Camogie, our wish would be that we would work with the team managements to improve the overall setup around the teams, to improve on the on-field performance on match days. And again, we should at least, and I know that the players are saying this also, we should at least beat an All-Ireland quarter-final every year at senior level. Our juniors, I would like to think, would be capable of winning the All-Ireland next year at Premier Junior level. And after that, when they progress into intermediate, we have to regroup and see exactly what's involved. Our minors have been doing very well for a good number of years, and we still have to continue with that. And we've some excellent managers and mentors on all the teams and development squads from 14, 15, 16, 17 and minor. And by keeping all those people working together, we should be improving year on year in terms of the way we perform in the inter-county championships.
And then, Joe, to mirror the performances on the field, in what are the targets for the board as a whole off the field?
Well, off the pitch, I mean, we have a lot of work to do in terms of resources, financing, and sponsorship, and we have a lot of work to do in relation to the Father Mac Park development as well, to bring that along, right up to the point where we have our two pitches available, and at least we can maintain one as the A-rate pitch, and the other one can be warm-up, can be training, you know, can give us massive freedom in terms of organising training sessions, and maybe we graduate on to the point where we can actually build a stand for spectators. So we would certainly see ourselves as developing in the future.
Yeah, and indeed, Joe, you know, as I said, it is all positive for Clare Camogie. And I suppose there's one thing that we didn't mention there. You know, you said about fundraising, and what a venture by your PRO. And I was just wondering whether you're going to send her out touring the country again next year.
No, I must say that what Breed McNamara undertook this year was physically punishing and mentally punishing, but financially massively successful. There's nobody that I know of who would have undertaken what she took. And it, like from the 1st to the 29th of August, she covered 515 kilometres, and she raised well over €15,000.
Joe, I wouldn't drive it in the month, never mind walking it.
Well, that's what a lot of people actually say. And she's phenomenal in the effort that she puts in. But the breed has been putting in 100% effort. All through her involvement in Camogie, but has gone back when she was country secretary and all the years as PRO. And that has been recognised nationally with all the awards she has won over the years, you know. But it's a funny thing, actually. It was a lovely off-pitch event all through the COVID scenario, and one that certainly I enjoyed being involved in with her. And I only wish I could have done more, but as you say, I wouldn't drive it on the mountain.
And Joe, I suppose at the end of it all, look at the whole community Camogie organisation on and off the field. As you said, it was great to see everyone working together, and you look forward to it. There is a close bond there between all, there's no doubt about that. And we look forward to more positive results in the year coming.
I can tell you, Leo, the executives that I have are a phenomenal group of people. They're very dedicated, very able, obviously, you know, capable of delivering on any aspect of the business that we have to deliver on, and more importantly, all working together. And that's what will help us to drive forward.
And indeed, Joe O'Donnell, with that, we look forward to 2021 with optimism and no little hope. And Joe, on behalf of all in Scariff Bay Community Radio here, we must thank you and your officers for the respect that you've shown us and the courtesy shown to us by allowing us to cover the games at all venues for the Clare Camogie. And, you know, without you, we wouldn't be as successful as we are. And we thank you very much for saying.
Hear, hear.
Well, equally, coming back to you on that one, Leo, you're more than welcome to us at any time. But certainly the coverage you have given Camogie has been really fantastic. And on top of that, I mean, it was such a bad year, but people were able to listen to their matches, you know, and fair play to you, it's fantastic that you give us that support. So together we can work well.
And indeed, with Joe, we'll leave it on that. And Joe, okay, as always, it is a pleasure to talk to you. Joe O'Donnell, Chairperson of the Clare Camogie Board, Gormila Mahagut.
Thank you.
Slán, Joe.
Bye.
And once again, thanks to Joe O'Donnell for taking time to talk to us here on Scariff Bay Community Radio. And we move from Joe O'Donnell and to a well-known journalist here in Clare, well-known all over the country, a man with over 50 years of journalism experience, a man very good to us in Scariff Bay Community Radio. Seamus Hayes, you're welcome once again.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks,
Beth. Leo, or
Seamus, first of all, can we offer our congratulations from all here to your family, and especially to your son, Joe, on his involvement as a selector and coach with the Tipperary Senior Football Team on winning a Munster Senior Football Championship at 85 years. A proud moment, Seamus.
Yeah, it was, a proud moment. It was great that he was involved. I suppose he had a tough start to the championship facing his beloved Clare because... you know, he's been so many years playing with Clare, but, you know, he Davy Power approached him at the end of last year to get involved and temporarily this year. He's living down there, so he threw in his lot with them, and he's been involved in the club seat down there with J.K. Brackens this year as well. So he threw in his lot, and, you know, it was a great day. It was a fantastic result for football.
It was.
You know, and that's a... saying anything against Cork. Cork could do with the win, I suppose. They have been down for a while in relation to football, but it was a superb result, I suppose, and particularly the year that's in it, the historic occasion that was the centenary of Bloody Sunday and the Tipperary involvement on that occasion, and you know, they wore the jerseys that they wore 100 years ago. And I suppose who would have believed that the same four semi-finalists as were there 100 years ago would come through this year. You know, Tipper outsiders, Cavan were rank outsiders in Ulster, and they both did the business and turned the championship, I suppose, on its head. So yeah, yes, it was great. It was a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, and indeed, and great credit to you to the GA for all the what went on with how they honoured the people that were involved in Bloody Sunday. I think there's great credit and great tribute due to them all. Outside of that, Seamus, really looking at especially at the Tipperary game, which we're going to focus on for a minute, but not only was the great for Tipperary to win, But I thought the real winner on Sunday was the game of football, because it was the most enjoyable football style I have seen playing this year. And other footballers from outside of Tipperary, from the high profile counties, mentioned about the style of football and how lovely it was to watch it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most pleasing aspects of the whole thing. You know, I suppose there was a return to maybe a certain amount of the high catching that's so intrinsic in Gaelic football. You know, Colin O'Riordan.
Mentioning J.K. Brackens again.
Mm. Yeah, Colin O'Riordan, you know, he made some fantastic high catches, particularly in the last quarter of an hour. There were some fantastic points from Conor Sweeney and from Michael Quindaman, you know, and it was fantastic that way. And I suppose the other thing for me that has kind of maybe opened up a question about is there have been calls for a while from a lot of people to get rid of the provincial championships and to have an open draw, a knockout championship with all 32 counties involved. Well, I think that was knocked on the head to a certain degree last weekend, because the value of the provincial championships was shown. What it meant to Tipperary after 85 years, what it meant to Cavan after 27 years since Cavan had last won.
23 years.
What it meant to the underdog to win, and what it meant to the followers. And, you know, I listened to David Power there in an interview after the game where he was saying that it will have young fellas wanting to play football for Tipperary for the next 20 years. You know, and I'm sure it's the same in Cavan. And it was the same in Clare in 92 when Clare made the breakthrough, and what it meant on that occasion. And the huge value of the provincial championships, you know, I'd be very sad to see the provincial championships go, you know, if it did happen.
And to continue that topic, Joe, or Seamus, Pat here, my emotional response is to agree totally. We all love Munster Championship hurling and football, and indeed all the provinces do. But I suppose the other side of the coin is year after year then as well, you know, Tip waited 85 years. Cavan, after having been very strong there 50, 60, 70 years ago, win it occasionally. But you're looking at Cork, or Kerry, I should say, winning Munster most years. You're looking at Dublin walking away with Leinster. That's exceptional. Mayo and Galway kind of have sewn up Connacht fairly well over the years. What I mean is that the provincial system still, I suppose, gives the big teams the biggest days out most often. And is it a strong enough argument that they should be held on to in the future when a thing like last Sunday, which was fantastic, might only happen every, you know, 20, 30, 40 years? You know, that's the question. Is it often enough for getting the great moments?
Yeah, I suppose there's another aspect to it as well, I suppose. I suppose the knockout championship. Yeah, you know, we'll say in modern times, over the last 20 years, there have been backdoors and there have been group systems. And, you know, I think that those formats suit the stronger counties, if you like, because if they're caught once, they won't be caught a second time, more or less. So, you know, I think there's nothing like a knockout championship. You can have all the leagues you want, and there's a room for them, and by all means, continue with those. But, you know, the knockout championship is special. You know, on a given day, anyone can beat the big gun, and it means so much, and it raises so many hearts, I suppose, and gives hope to so many people who are maybe fighting against the odds all their life to try and promote the game in the weaker areas. So, part and parcel to me of retaining the provincial championships would be maybe the knockout championship. Now, I accept that people will argue for the effort that goes in. You know, maybe it's a bit rough in counties just to get one crack at it and be knocked out. But you can organise other competitions and have other attractions or other situations that would benefit those counties. But, you know, the knockout championship, you know, there, I suppose, by necessity this year because of COVID-19. But it has added to the excitement.
There's no doubt about that, Seamus. And I suppose looking ahead to 2021, and I suppose it'll probably be more of the same maybe for next year, you know, because it doesn't look like the vaccine is going to be ready until maybe, you know, maybe into the middle of the year. So, you know, they're talking about the split season. And what's your thoughts on the split season? You know, the way we had the club first of all this year and then run the county second. You know, it looks like that could be the format again next year, maybe the other way around.
Yeah, they're saying that, and maybe the other way around. you know, I personally, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it this year, with having the club scene first. I know a lot of people mightn't agree with me. I don't know why, but, you know, I think that this year the club got real value, if you like, from their county players. They had them for training, and they'd made training, they'll all tell you, it made training all the more interesting and all the livelier. The big guns, as we call them, within the clubs were there for all training sessions. So all the club players had to step up to the mark and maybe put in a greater effort. And I think those club players benefited as a result of that. I'd like to see the club scene first. You know, we'd have to wait and see, I suppose, what proposals will come from Croke Park. You know, they're talking of inter-county the first half of the year. But, you know, what's going to happen to the club during that half of the year? Are they going to be asked to play league games without the county players? A bit like, we'll say, maybe what's going on in rugby at the moment.
Right. Yeah.
You know, where the big ones from each of the provinces, once they're called up to the Irish team, they're not available to their provincial setup. And, you know, there's a lot of clubs up and down the country. And just look at Clare, there are an awful lot of clubs here that would lose out if they don't have their county players available for some games, at least throughout the league campaign.
Yeah, and indeed, Seamus, the overriding emotion and the feedback from all the players, even especially in our own area here in Scariffia Community Radio and around, is that the overall emotion was the greatest enjoyment the players got was this year, was, as you said, having their county players. And obviously, of course, there was no hurling for a lot of the year, or football either, but the emotion of the enjoyment that they enjoyed the year so much.
Yeah, and I think that was very important. You know, it kind of put the club back up in the in the limelight, if you like, and it meant an awful lot to the club to have the county players available. And, as I said, there are a lot of clubs that you know, will struggle, you know, if the county players aren't available to them. The county players are very valuable; they're your best players. I think, you know, if clubs are forced to play a lot of their competitions without their county players, it will weaken their chances of improving. It will weaken their chances of getting sponsors to come in behind them, because why should somebody back a club financially in a big way if they're going to be playing a lot of the competitions without their big stars? You know, I think there are a lot of questions that way, but definitely I would agree that the split season is a factor and will become reality over the coming years. But I would like to see the club scene first. I would like to see the club getting the first crack at the players and getting them when they're available and you know, when they're able to attend the training and give the leadership that helps the club so much.
I think most GAA lovers will be with you 100% on that, Seamus. Just to go back to the Tipperary and the Cavan, you know, fantastic results again last weekend. I think everybody realised, at least I felt anyway, that the Cavan Donegal game was an absolute and real shock. But myself and lots of other people who know more about football than I do would have said that the Tipperary victory over Cork wasn't really a shock, in the sense that Kerry were asleep against Cork on that horrible wet day with the late goal from the bad man back from Australia. But that, you know, Tip were never afraid of Cork at underage level up along, and that this was nearly on the cards.
Yeah, it certainly was, because, you know, a lot of these Tipperary players had played on minor teams and under 21 teams that had beaten Cork, and minor and under 21 teams that had won provincial titles. So, you know, they weren't in awe of Cork, if you like, going in. And I suppose there was the other thing as well. There was always the danger that Cork were going to find it hard to come down from the high that they were on after beating Kerry. You know, they would say they were rank outsiders going in to play Kerry. Kerry were being touted as the team most likely to take down Dublin, if Dublin are to be beaten. Just on the day, everything went right for Cork, and they showed the more aggression, they showed the more hunger, if you like. I suppose there was always the danger that they mightn't be able to reproduce that. But I think, to be fair to Tipperary, they played some great football. You know, we said it there at the start. It was a fantastic
game. Great style
game.
Of football, yeah.
A great style of football. Mm. They matched Tipperary, and, you know, they showed that they had outstanding players. Like, there was a Kevin Fahey there, centre back. I'd say any of the top counties would have him on their side. You know, his hunger for the ball and his work rate was magnificent. And then, of course, Quinlivan and Sweeney and Colin O'Riordan excelled as well. So from that point of view, you know, they were well up there. They were quite deserving of the victory. And, you know, I wouldn't rule out the fact that they're going to, or the, rule out the possibility of them causing another upset the next year. But yeah. who's to say that 1920 won't be repeated in the, with the semi-finals either? You know, it's the habit of repeating itself, I suppose.
Yeah, and of course, South Tipperary and parts of that area are very strong in football and always have been. But there's a few less from other parts of the county as well. So there's a bit of a spread around the county on the tip team as well, James.
There is, yeah. And, like, you know, Stephen O'Brien is some better than that. Yeah, you know, they had key players in both tip Holland football teams, with Michael Breen and the Holland team. So, you know, there is a spread over there. I know South Tip is the big football country, but there is a good spread, and it is a big county.
Yeah,
and indeed, Seamus, looking, as you mentioned, the All-Ireland semi-final, and, you know, it is not beyond the doubts the possibility that Tipperary will play Mayo. They ran Mayo close a couple of years ago, and only a lack of experience that all those Tip players will have well gained on by now. And I'd say James Horan will be, he won't be, you know, he'll be walking, treading thin ice and be warning about his players about getting ready for this game.
Oh, certainly will. Like, you know, because the big task for Tipperary now is to come down from the high that they're on for the last day or two as a result of winning the Munster title for the first time in 85 years. You know, they'll have to guard against that, but they will have seen, you know, other counties suffer like that. You can't take any, you can't treat any opponent lightly in a knockout competition in a two-horse race. You know, so I think that Tipperary will be well up for it, probably so will Mayo, and it has the makings of a great game.
Yeah, and indeed, looking at the Kevin Dublin game, and in fairness to Kevin, you know, people said that, you know, it was a shock, but on the day, they fully deserved their victory. And Seamus, looking at the Kevin Dublin game, and of course, Dublin got through Leinster very, very easy. Seamus, the playing of this game in Croke Park is asking an awful lot of questions, and we were kind of led to believe that Croke Park was the venue for these games because of crowds, and which is not an issue at the moment. And can you see the mirror, or could you ever see the match being changed out of Croke Park?
I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think all players aspire to playing in Croke Park. Just as here and there, you know, you ask any club player, even from the perceived weaker clubs, where they'd like to play, and they all want to play in Cusick Park. You know, all players kind of want to play in the main stadium. You know, and from that point of view, I'd say that the Cavan players would love to play in Croke Park. It's a fantastic pitch, a fantastic surface, apart altogether from the surrounds and from the stands and all the other
facilities they have there. Yeah,
facilities they have there. But I think that the players, you know, would want to play in Croke Park. So from that point of view, I don't see it being changed. It's an All Ireland semi final, and whoever gets through the final is going to be there anyhow. You know, it's your main stadium, and the final is going to be in Croke Park. So people will want to have a run out there beforehand. The big thing is, the big disappointment will be, I suppose, for Tipperary and Kevin, is that they won't have supporters there.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's understandable in the year of the Synod, and, you know, with this COVID-19, people have to follow the guidelines if we're ever going to get rid of it.
Yeah, and in fairness to people that follow those guidelines well. Seamus, a quick look back on the, how do you analyse the year that went for the Clare Senior Hurlers?
Well, it's disappointing any time you're beaten. But, you know, I think that maybe after the first game against Limerick, there was a feeling that Clare wouldn't go much further. And maybe they were a trifle lucky to get past Laois in round two. But they raised their game and had a good win over a Wexford team that were fancied big time to be in the latter stages this year following their results last year. You know, and they did a lot of good hurling last week, I suppose, but they came up against a more evenly balanced Waterford team. And the disappointing thing, I suppose, was I thought that their defence struggled last week, and you know, they were caught open on a few occasions, which led to vital scores for Waterford. But given the year that was in it, and given the absence of players like John Conlon, Peter Duggan, Colm Galvin, you know, I think Clare did quite well to get as far as they got, and they showed a good bit of progress.
And Seamus, as we have the semi-finals this weekend, who do you tip to be appearing in the All-Ireland Hurling Final?
I think it'll be Kilkenny versus Limerick. Now, that said, but I'm not ruling out either Galway or Waterford. I think they both have excellent chances. But from Kilkenny's point of view, the fact that they had a week off last week, I think, will benefit them. You know, benefit the likes of Colin Findlay and the older players, if you like. And should they win against Waterford this week, they'll have a couple of weeks off again before a final. So I think they're in a great position. Limerick have been the team of the championship, maybe. Now, some people might argue that the struggle may be a little the less there, but they still look very strong. They have a very strong panel. They have five or six players that can come in who are as good as anything that's on the field. You know, that's got to be an intriguing semi-final against Galway, because they're both big, strong, physical teams. Both that are in great sets of players are in great shape, very well prepared. And it's going to be an intriguing contest, really. And I'd give the edge to Limerick at this stage, but I think that one will be very close.
And Seamus, finally, you know, great credit must go to GA locally and at national level, you know, for the way that the competitions have been run and where all guidelines have been followed.
Yeah, certainly. You know, from a stage maybe not so long ago in the year when we didn't know if there would be any games, down to the last four, the games have been great. They have been all available on one channel or another. And the public have been able to see them. I know it's disappointing that they can't be at the games, but you'd have to give great credit to the GA for the way they have run the whole show and for the way they have, you know, they've spread them around to different venues, and the venues have been in great shape as well. You know, and last weekend, you know, it was superb. Everything was superbly organised. Even the centenary commemoration was a superb event on Saturday evening. So, yes, full marks for the GA on this occasion. I suppose we criticise them often enough for a lot of things, but yeah, they certainly deserve full marks for the way they've run these competitions.
Agreed. Finally, Seamus, can you see any way at all that Sam Maguire won't be going back to Dublin for the sixth year in a row? Can you see any chink at all?
I think last weekend we had massive shocks, but it would be a seismic shock altogether if that happened, if Dublin didn't win it. You know, they're the foreign team. They said there about Limerick having four or five subs that can come on as good as anything they're on the field. Dublin must have another 24 or five, you know, yeah, footballers as good as what they have on the field. And, you know, when you look at the amount of All-Ireland middle holders amongst their subs last week, you know, they're in a great position, and they're just hungry for winning. And, like, you know, Stephen Cluxton has been there so long. He looks like a fella going for his first All-Ireland, you know, yeah, the way he's playing. And there's so many pluses that it will be a massive, massive shock if they don't win the All-Ireland.
But challenge. That's the challenge for everyone. And, you know, other people like that have been taken down, and hopefully maybe on this occasion it may happen. Seamus says...
Well, there's always a chance that they'll have an off day, and that it'll all happen on the one day, but at the present moment it's very hard to see that.
Dizzy Farrell has lost an All-Ireland final to Tipperary before. It could happen again,
correct, yeah.
Seamus Hayes, as always, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. You're very good, and Garamina Mahagut.
No problem, anytime, okay.
And once again, thanks to Seamus Hayes for taking the time to talk to us. And now we move down to the south of the country, and we get our regular south correspondent, a man well known to us here, a man with All-Ireland medals at underage and senior level with Kilkenny, Adrian Ronan. Adrian, you're welcome once again.
Man, thanks very much, Leo. Thank you.
Adrian, a quick look back to last weekend and the quarterfinals, and Waterford and Galway came through, and Tipperary and Clare bit the dust.
Yeah, I suppose leading into the games, I suppose a lot of people were wondering what way the Galway Tip match would go, and I suppose from this side of the border, looking across, you look in from one side, we look in from the other side, and we'd be bordering this on this side in the Ballingarry Mullinahone direction and Thurles direction. So you'd hear all the different rumours, and there was rumours coming out that Tipperary camp wasn't all well, wasn't in the Tipperary camp. You know, the longevity, I suppose, of the Tipperary Championship and the Lochmore by the two McGraths in particular, and how that impacted on their well-being, I suppose, you know, losing two county finals. So all wasn't well, and as you got closer to the match on Saturday, you felt that that rumour was getting stronger, and maybe there was a little bit of discontent in the Tipperary camp and all wasn't well, and that might have just impacted on the group of players. Now, we all know it came down to a sending off offence at the end of the day. That's what it came down to, the changing of the game. But just, as I said, the camp wasn't seemingly wonderful, and maybe just a bit of unity and spirit maybe wasn't, you know, as I said, and of course, instead of two McGraths, we're after having such a great impact on Tipperary hurling the last number of years, particularly the last couple of years with John coming into the team. And it looked like, you know, those guys had such a tough year with their club. It affected the performance of Tipperary. So look, Galway got the better of them and obviously present the best and the most difficult proposition now for Limerick.
Yeah, and I suppose as you look at Tipperary, and I suppose the rumours that obviously were out there, you know, there's no smoke without a fire, but definitely the spirit didn't seem to be really, the same bite didn't seem to be in Tipperary as there was in previous years.
Yeah, and again, from listening and, you know, from within people from close to the camp, we'd hear, you know, some of it is obviously rumours, more of it is relatively reliable or reasonably reliable, but Tip were going very well pre-COVID, you know, they were getting a good bounce out of them, they were hitting the right place, going for the double, and it obviously impacted on them, you know, the whole COVID thing, as it has other teams and everybody, but as trying to achieve the double-double, some of their players obviously lost that bit of hunger and lost that bit of bite and that bit of jizz, and sure, the obvious player that no one seems to mention at the minute is the demise of the Bubbles this year. You know, the Bubbles didn't appear really for Tipperary at the level that was expected of him, and as we all know, he's been a hugely influential player. While we talk about Tipperary and the capable people that they do have up front, look, when you go back on the big moments in Tipperary's last 4 or 5 years, Bubbles has been very much part of it, and he wasn't ready for battle this winter, and again, he was a serious loss. And when you go through it, you know, you can't afford to be short lads of that quality. And you know, Tip were introducing a few of the younger players. They will come good again, but maybe there was too many coming too quickly, or too much expected of too many of the young lads too quickly. And as I said, you know, the Bubbles, John Dwyer, was a big loss. I mean, the man has huge ability, and he just wasn't ready for winter action.
But as well as that too, you know, you're right, totally what you're saying, Adrian, about Bubbles, and of course John McGrath as well, only playing bit parts, but also Paddy Maher and Brendan Maher have been central to Tipperary for the last 8, maybe 10 years. Brendan Maher, a fantastic year last year with his club as well. But they were only shadows of the players they were as well. So, no team, no matter how good the panel is, can afford to have those leaders off form and just not up to it. Yet, of course, it did boil down to the Cathal Barrett sending off. But as you say, Tip could have been so much better had these lads been playing better.
Yeah, and I go back, I suppose we're not in the habit of repeating ourselves, but those, as you rightly said, are the leaders of the group, you know, and again, it's hard, you know, in the depths of winter, in the depths of COVID, in the depths of the weather, the time of year, to have that, I suppose, you know, that just little bit of extra fight and fire, you know, in your, you know, after, especially after winning the All-Ireland, and it was so long ago now, you know, they were the longest serving All-Ireland winning champions for, I suppose they got an extra 3-4 months out of it. And you know, in that case, you know, I think time just caught up with Tipperary. I think again they might have needed, you know, they may need a rest and come back. They're certainly Tip of a huge future, there's no doubt about
and
that.
I suppose they have neighbours giving them a flack about not being able to do two in a row as well, if they had dream here and there.
Well, seemingly there was neighbours all around them, there was. We weren't on our own. There was other videos.
Well, we can talk over here, but you could certainly.
They're close to a lot of counties, so they're getting it from all corners. Adrian, a quick word on Clare and you know, Brian Lohan's first year in charge.
Yeah, well, sure, again, he got a great bounce when you consider who he was short four All-Stars. Again, and being on this side, we wouldn't have heard as much coming from the Clare camp. You'd know a lot more, but you know, I suppose that I suppose for me looking in, Aaron Shanahan was, you know, a massive plus on the day for Tipperary coming back, or for Clare coming back onto the team. And again, a man have huge ability, and you know, he wasn't, when you were talking about who Clare was short, he was short for one or two games as well. So Clare got a huge bounce out of the group that he had, considering the lads he was short. And I think when he looks back at the year and on reflection, Clare will go, you know, Clare on an upward curve, considering, as I said, who they were short and who they, you know, that, like, to be fair, Watford were always going to be in the ascendancy there. They had, I suppose, all the talk was about suppose, Waterford, and you know, that feel good factor. And again, we're closer to Waterford, we're hearing what's going on down here in this corner of the world, and again, they're going, so, you know, they are going in the right direction, and Liam Cahill has given a huge bounce. But look, the minute Tony Kelly, you know, suffered that injury, and I missed some of it. Someone mentioned to me somewhere that he went down in the warm-up. I didn't read or hear much more.
Brian Nolan said that in the aftermatch interview, the surprise was all, actually,
Yeah, and I didn't read much about it that day already, you know, that. But someone mentioned to me that saw a picture of him that he went down to the warm-up. Look, Tony Kelly's an exception player, and the fact that he wasn't able to go on full belt obviously affected the Clare performance. But again, they hung in there for a long time. But look, when you see what's gone on the weekend in the football world, and you see the hurling world, there's a fairy tale story going on in the football world. And you see the Tipperary performance and the champions in the football and the cabin. Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility of a fairy tale story in the hurling world? Well, because one team can have a fairy tale this year if they keep progressing.
Yeah, indeed, there's no doubt about it. And looking, first of all, and the clock is running again, but Kilkenny and Waterford, you know, a lot of the time form goes out the window, neighbouring counties, and, you know, as you said, Waterford get the great points off Liam Cahill, and, you know, in fairness, his success speaks for itself, and they ran Limerick to 4 points and only maybe ran out of steam in the last 5 or 6 minutes. So, you know, Kilkenny coming in the back of a good victory against Galway, you know, came good at the right time. An interesting battle here, Adrian.
Yeah, no, neighbours, as you rightly said, over the years, always Kilkenny probably would have had the measure of Waterford, and of course that All-Ireland victory of Hammering, I suppose, that still haunts the Waterford men going back to the late 2000s. And that still haunts them, and they still bring it up every day. And that's in the back of their minds, and Waterford want to rectify that. And then if ever Kilkenny were going into an All-Ireland semi-final on a 50-50 game, this is the one. It is a 50-50 match. Kilkenny's performance have been only reasonably good. You know, had a heckle and jive performance against Dublin. Seemingly we robbed Galway. I don't think, believe we did rob Galway. I think we bet Galway fair and square. But I think, as I said, there's a... Liam Cahill is getting a great bounce out of Waterford. They've nothing to lose. He's getting a great response. Kilkenny, look, will obviously be the favourites. But if there's a surprise to happen, obviously Waterford are capable of that surprise. It won't be, I suppose, a massive surprise. But Kilkenny will have to be all guns blazing. They'll have to be ready. They did play him in a challenge match 3 or 4 weeks before the championship started. And the challenge circuit, and they had a ding dong match, and it was only 3 points in that challenge match.
Adrian, of the newer Kilkenny players, maybe trying to break through in the last couple of years, who do you think Brian Cody is most pleased with, or even did yourself, you know, of the 3 or 4 newish names?
Well, of the newish names, I'd say I'm sure he's very happy with the likes of Conor Delaney. He has a long term future, whether it's fullback or centre back or cornerback. So there's a lot. He's done very well in the last two matches. Conor Brown continues to impress, and I suppose up front Billy Ryan is one again. We're saying they're relatively new. They're new as in they've been there the last 2, 3 years, 4 years on the panel, but only getting bit time. So looking in from where Cody is, there is other players breaking in. He'll hope that Delaney, Conor Brown and Billy Ryan, those three in particular, offer a lot of speed, offer a lot of good aerial battle that he has, and as I said, have huge, attributes that Cody believes in, you know what I mean, that they're honest and they're hard working and win their own ball. And those three in particular have been particularly pleasing for the supporters in general if you listen to the people on the ground.
Yeah. And Adrian, you know, given the impact that Richie Hogan had the last time when he was brought on, do you expect Brian Cody to leave Richie Hogan on the bench, or would you expect him maybe to throw him in from the word go?
Again, I'm not sure, but thinking and trying to second-guess Brian Cody was a very difficult thing to do. And bearing in mind that now he has DJ and Martin Comfort and James McGarry there, and the boys will have a different angle, and as ex-forwards, they'll have a different angle on what Richie's role will be. But I'd expect Richie still to have an impact role for the minute. I think that's what Richie might prefer at this stage as well. There mightn't be an hour's hurling or an hour and 10 minutes hurling in Richie Hogan at this stage, just because, again, as I said, he's coming back from a hamstring injury. He missed a good month of club hurling in Kilkenny in September when he was absolutely flying it. He was comfortably one of the best hurlers in Kilkenny club hurling in August and September in Kilkenny, and then got a hamstring injury at a real wrong time, and that's delayed by about 5, 6, 7 weeks his progress, I suppose, during the winter. So is there now in Richie Hogan because of that injury? Maybe not. Is his impact, the impact that of against Galway, if that can be repeatable, then that's the role I think Brian Cody might have for.
And Adrian, I think there's a general feeling amongst all holding followers that it was great to see a smile on the face of Richie Hogan, you know, after that game the last day. You know, considering what happened last year in the final, I think all holding followers were thrilled because he's an exceptional player.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear that coming from your side of the world, because we think that here locally for sure. He's an exceptional player. I was blessed and fortunate to have him, dealt with him for 4 years in Danesforth. And a man, as I said, they showed highlights and clips of what he'd done for Kilkenny there in a 5 or 6 minute tribute, a video there recently. I witnessed it with his club for 4 years and many years locally. The man, look, only for injury this man would be up there. When they talk about the hurlers of Tony Kelly's and the TJ Reid's, this man was heading that direction in 2012, 13, 14. So, yeah, he's up there.
And Adrian, at the end of the day, I suppose you'd expect Kilkenny to just about overcome the Waterford challenge.
Yeah, you'd hope that happened, but I wouldn't be surprised that if Waterford get caught. Look, you're going on the basis that maybe we just are forewarned here now. We're well warned at this stage. It's not as if we're going in cold here and we didn't expect it. So I think when Brian Cody and Kilkenny are forewarned, that means we have no excuses. So we've got plenty of warning in the last 6-7 days and of what Waterford can bring and what we can expect from Waterford. And based on that, look, then I think we'll have our homework done and hope we'll have our homework done and expect a tight win. It won't be an easy one for sure, and it won't be a high margin like anything like previous Waterford matches and Kilkenny matches. It'll be very close either way, but just on the fact that we've been forewarned, I think we might just be catching Waterford. There's Waterford are maybe are a year ahead of themselves. Mean Cad is having an exceptional time with Waterford. Great fella. The Waterford team are hurling like he hurled himself, and the personality in Liam Cahill is coming out in the Waterford players. They're dying their backs for the Waterford jersey, and Liam Cahill did that when he was hurling for his club. He did it when he was hurling for Tipperary, and I just hope they're coming at us a year too early. I wish them the best of luck next year in this case, maybe we just might take them.
And Adrian, in all of 2 minutes, your thoughts on Galway and Limerick?
Everyone's talking Limerick up. We said it ourselves here numerous times. Limerick are the team. Whoever wants to win the All-Ireland will have to beat Limerick. Whoever can beat Limerick is going to obviously take the championship by the scruff of the neck. For me, I have to say I've been reasonably impressed with Galway. I saw them in the flesh play against Kilkenny. They were very good on the day. We had, as I said, a stroke of genius in Richie Hogan and turned the game. They've obviously produced a form last week against Tipperary. They are probably the best equipped team to take on Limerick. They have it every way. They're big, they're strong, they're fast, they're fit. They have everything. They have subs, they have a panel, they have a very astute management team. I think, again, Galway won't be too far away. I give Galway every chance.
Yeah, interesting. And finally, Adrian, you know, there's been a discussion all week about the performance of Johnny Murphy, the referee last Sunday, and the decisions made by the GA. And here we go again this weekend, and Fergal Horgan refereeing Waterford Kilkenny with a Tipperary man as manager of Waterford.
Yeah, look, it's not easy on the referees, that's for sure. No one would like to be involved in refereeing. I mean, so in that case, and bearing in mind what's going on, I think to take the pressure off the referees, we can all say what we like, it shouldn't matter, but it does matter. They do know each other. They do, next weekend, Liam Cahill will know Fergal Horgan. Does that matter? It shouldn't, but does it matter and play in the back of his mind? Is it the fact that we're all speaking about and writing about it this week? Yes, it does. There's enough of referees in the country. Maybe to avoid that controversy and to avoid that unnecessary pressure and stress to a referee, it's hard enough ref a game without that innuendo and rumour mill going on in the background. So look, the GA to be helpful if the GA took that pressure off the referee and maybe give a man from another province possibly, or certainly another county, that has many involved.
Adrian, the clock has caught up on us. As always, it's lovely hearing your views here on Scariff Bay Community Radio, and once again, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us, and we look forward to Mouthwatering semi-finals the weekend.
Great stuff. Thanks a million, boys.
Thanks, Adrian.
And that concludes our Sports and So here today on Scariff Bay Community Radio on 88.3 FM, 92.7 FM, and on the TuneIn app in association with Derek Crilly Jr. My thanks, as always, to co-presenter Pat McNamara, and a special thanks to our guests of Joe O'Donnell, Seamus Hayes, and Adrian Ronan. Special thanks also to the man that can control tower is Jim Collins, and thanks very much to you for listening at home. We hope you enjoyed the programme. And with that, all that remains for me is for Leo Doyle, for Sportstime, for Scariff Bay Community Radio, in association with Dáil Credit Union, it's Bennett Day, August 10th.